The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find the network and all of our content on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I am joined, as always, by Tom Schreier, who is producing today. Tom, how are we doing?
Doing well.
Good to hear. We went and got a little chicken beforehand, so we killed a little bit of time with that. That was a lot of fun. We do have an in-studio guest today, which is wonderful. For a second week in a row, we got Mike Berardino of the Pioneer Press on with us. Mike, how are we doing?
Where's my chicken?
Yeah, no kidding. I was tempted to text you, but I didn't want you to text and drive.
No.
And so I was like, well, you know, maybe we can just get rid of all the evidence, crush all the evidence. And I did my part to get rid of the food.
No, but I was too slow.
Leisurely Tom over here taking his time with his chicken fingers.
Tom has one of their fine branded napkins, and I saw him eating chicken fingers as I walked in. So I know, I'm on to you. I know what happened.
This is the reporter. Yeah, that,
I know what happened.
He chased down the story. And so a lot of good stuff to get to, a lot of interesting stuff to get to. Mike was on the conference call, as was I yesterday, Twins announcing the hires of three special assistants, names that will be obviously very familiar to anybody who's followed the Twins for any length of time. Torrey Hunter, Michael Kadire, LaTroy Hawkins. Mike, my takeaway was these guys believe they have a lot to learn and a lot to give back. They are very excited, very energized, enthused about this opportunity. The company line, at least from those guys, was that there was no other team they were going to work for except the Twins. What do you think of my assessments, and then what was your assessment coming away from that conference call?
Well, I just think it's enjoyable to have three outstanding quotes at arm's length again.
Yes.
All three can provide insight on any topic.
Are they going to relocate to Minnesota? I mean, they probably don't have to.
No, certainly not. I mean, it's but we're going to see them in Fort Myers for sure, and then throughout the year, I think they'll cycle through Target Field here and there, especially leading up to the draft. I thought the last part of our conversation there on the conference call was enlightening, and it was good to get Torrey's scouting report on the makeup of Hunter Green. And again, these guys, Kadire, Hawkins, and Hunter, in terms of the amateur side of things and helping Darren Johnson negotiate that or decide what to do with number one overall pick, first time the Twins will have had it since Maurer, I don't think they're necessarily going to be the ones spotting a delivery flaw, although Hawkins can do that, or spotting a loopy swing. The scouts can do that. What they could do, I would want them, all three of them, to have, even if it's a pitcher or hitter, I'd want them to have a conversation. It could be 5 minutes, could be an hour, with anybody I was considering picking number one overall, for sure, when it gets down to three or four names, and am I already be whittled that far. But it's great. Torrey's already met Hunter Green and thinks he's a fine young man.
Yeah, and that's a good voice or a good endorsement to have in that organization. Torrey Hunter carries a lot of weight in terms of voice. Do you think it helps or will it matter at all? Those three guys were all high school picks by the Twins, too, and so they are going to Torrey was a first-round pick the same year they took Veritek in 1993. I don't know that a lot of people know the Twins took Jason Veritek, you know, with how he ended up with the Boston Red Sox and had a, you know, a borderline fringe Hall of Fame type career, at least at his peak. Drafting all those guys as high school guys, Kadire as the high school shortstop out of Virginia and all that, they will have some of that, been through it all before. Again, you know, most guys that are drafted in college probably were in high school picked as well. But I suppose that too is going to help understanding what those guys were going through at that time, because what you might perceive as an immaturity issue, you know, as somebody who is so far removed from the process, you know, like Terry Ryan, who hadn't played pro baseball for 40 years, you know, within the last few years here, I think that could be a good way to kind of channel some of that knowledge, in knowing, you know, 17-year-old, 18-year-old that might not be as polished as they are when you bring them up at 21, 22, you know, they can help kind of comb some of that over too.
Yeah, I think all that applies, and the fact that Torrey has college-age sons who are athletes, I think makes him, puts on his life arc and career arc, I think it's going to be great that he will be introduced along with the others to front office side of things. And as I mentioned in the article, I took it to mean that they will be versed now in anything that they show a curiosity about, and that could be video scouting and how to use statistics properly in the modern era, and things that Torrey's on record not being a big fan of sabermetrics. Well, I think he's going to get an education along with the others on spin rate and the whole nine yards. It's going to be as Derek Falvey mentioned, that it'll allow them to merge. What they're looking for in the end is to merge the statistical and the scouting side, the traditional and the modern, and what better way to have the players then go, these guys potentially go through and explain to players once, they're kind of their ambassadors in many ways, and it could be as simple as being the interpreter sometimes. I thought LaTroy made a great point on the call about how he intends, he's not going to be shy. No, all three of them will not be shy in their opinions, but open-minded while also open with their thoughts. And LaTroy said, it's not, from what I gathered, he's not afraid to tell Derek and Thad, I wouldn't say that to a player that way necessarily. Maybe you try this.
Could come across as cold to a player, I'm sure.
Sure. And so just bridging that gap is part of their job.
So we kind of talked off the air about this, but I feel like if Kadire and Hunter were kind of part of the team while Aaron Hicks was coming up, you might not have the issues where he was showing up late, not looking at, the pitcher before, he went to at-bat. I feel like they're there to set a standard in some sense, right? Kadire, what it means to be a major league player. And Torrey Hunter just seems to be kind of like head of morale, right? He's the guy who got the smoke machine going. And at least a lot of those young guys I talked to told me, he's the guy, kind of guy who cheers you up when you're going through a slump. I mean, how much do you think, we're talking about the amateur players, but how much do you think they could affect the guys in the actual clubhouse?
All that can happen. They won't be a daily presence, but when they come through, whether major or minor league clubhouses during the course of a year, it will provide a jolt where a jolt is needed. It'll provide a pat on the back and support where needed. And, they can pass along a message from a manager, from a coach in a way that, as LaTroy pointed out, it might go a little farther because they have been playing at the major league level so recently, all of them just out for 1 year. I'd like to say something here, though, that didn't come up on the conference call at all, and I think it's kind of just understood, but to make sure your listeners understand, this is nothing that Terry Ryan was against. If anything, I mean, we forget that Hawkins and Hunter were in spring training last year for 10 days apiece and made an impact right there, whether it was the pitch tipping that Jose Barrios was doing or the side sessions that Hawkins was working extra on with Alex Meyer, and Buddy Boshears is one of his guys. I mean, he kind of vouched for him after Boshears was released out of Rockies camp. Well, Hawkins was there. He knew him. He vouched for him already. But Terry certainly would have been happy to have all three of these guys on board. In fact, he said again days before he was fired in July, I said, where's it stand with Torrey Hunter joining your front office? And he says, it's an open invitation. When he's ready, he'll let me know. Well, all three of them were not ready yet. They had that year away from the game to clear the head and to decide how to proceed. And then a new administration comes in, and it just, and again, Derek with Cleveland had seen how it worked with Travis Fryman and Carlos Baerga and others, a handful, Tim Belcher, the Rangers with Thad Levine have gotten great mileage out of Darren Oliver, Michael Young more recently, Pudge Rodriguez is one of their guys. I mean, this is fans who would react and say same old Twins or Twins way, ha ha, whatever. They're not thinking it through. There are zero negatives about reaching back and getting it. You could almost take any set of three, with different skills, and we could play that game. We could put three different. I mean, the Twins have had a lot of really intriguing people pass through here, and people with something to offer. But these were the three primo guys that you could go get, and they got them.
Yeah, I want to touch on that. So I think it was your November 19th article I quoted in a story I just wrote. You pointed out all what you just said, that Levine and Falvey had dealt with kind of old players from the Cleveland and Texas organizations that came back. how widespread is this in the major leagues? Because I think people here, and it's only natural, are so focused on the Twins, and they kind of talk about this country club. And I mean, there are some concerns that Jack Morris would probably throw a pitcher 150 pitches if he could or whatever. Or, you know, Tom Kelly maybe has some outdated methods that worked back when he was winning World Series that wouldn't work now. But as much as we see all these Olivas and stuff around here in the Twins organization, this has to be common around the major leagues, right?
Well, I saw it firsthand with the Marlins for many years, going back to their infancy. Tony Perez was added as a special assistant in the mid-90s. Andre Dawson, shortly after his retirement, and he went out as a Marlin.
97, I think.
He was added. Yeah, he was added as a special assistant, and they've been in those roles ever since. And let me tell you, there were times in Miguel Cabrera's young career where Tony Perez pulled him aside and read him the riot act. There were times in Dontrelle Willis or Stanton or a number of players that came along and needed to be bumped back into line. Well, Andre Dawson was there to do that and continues to be, and those are, you know, two Hall of Famers, outstanding voices. They have also added Jeff Conine in recent years, Mr. Marlin, and he kind of has that more recent experience and can merge. He's involved in player acquisition and as Derek Falvey mentioned, these guys will be asked to tap into their resources around the game, having played in a number of different places. LaTroy played in more places than he didn't. Seems like they can get people on the phone and say, good guy, bad guy, you know, was he hiding an injury, whatever. They're just another way to get to the truth and to make informed decisions that can change the course of a franchise. How could that be anything but a positive?
Well, and so you touched on, excuse me, marrying stats with the scouts, and any good organization is going to do that. Do you suspect these guys are coming from the scouts side of things? Because, I mean, I guess, like you said, they're not going to spot a flaw in someone's delivery, and I don't suspect they're going to be all that statistically inclined yet either. Are they going to kind of just branch out with whichever they're more comfortable with? Because I have seen LaTroy on Twitter talking about Brian Kenny's new book, and I think he's becoming more sabermetrically savvy as he goes on. And again, I don't know that you need to necessarily subscribe to them, but I guess my biggest gripe is when people don't subscribe to them but don't take the time to understand them. And when you say someone's LMNOP and you make up a metric and you know, when people trash what they don't believe in without understanding what other people believe in, that falls flat for me because you're just ignoring the whole situation. I do think that that's something LaTroy Hawkins is going to try to do. Do you think the other guys will do that as well, or are they just going to kind of stay in their lane with whatever they can do right now as far as what they can offer on this, whichever side of the argument they fall on?
Well, I thought one of them, I think it was LaTroy, who said you can't force it. You're not going to come in there and or maybe it was Kadir, but it was fascinating listening to the three of them. I think they really enjoyed it. It was like sitting in on a think tank session, really, among modern baseball leadership and best practices. And all of them talked about how they couldn't remember being in a poisonous clubhouse or a clubhouse that was anything but a pleasure to work through and to report to every day. And that's pretty special, and I think all three of them had a lot to do with those facts. Now, there's certainly Kadir near the end with the Twins, from what I've heard, was frustrated with some of the things he saw among the fun bunch. And I've heard the same. And he moved on to Colorado, where he got a chance to play with Justin Morneau a few years later and with LaTroy. But as far as what they're taught in as they sit in on, say, sessions with Jack Goin and the statistical side, I think they're going to slowly learn these things and then try to ask questions and maybe poke holes in some of the stuff that, you know, certainly Torrey is on record not believing too much in UZR and range factor and defensive runs saved when it applied to him, although his final year here, and again, people, I think you made a good point there, when people are closed-minded about anything, no matter which side of the fence you're on or if there's three or four sides, if you're closed-minded about anything, what you're doing is limiting your learning ability moving forward. So if Torrey Hunter always felt that he that the sabermetrics did him a disservice, and that he knew when a ball needed to be caught because of his positioning, because of his paying attention out there, because of his preparation, because he knew how the pitcher, if it was a smart pitcher, was probably going to pitch the guy, where the ball might end up. It's guesswork. It's informed guesswork. That he still had value as a defender. Well, we saw it in his final year, and guess what? He was well ahead of Jay Bruce, who's a much younger man, 10 years younger. If you just looked at the analytics, you'd much rather have Torrey Hunter playing right field at age 40 than Jay Bruce at 29.
Yeah, I think he was plus like 2 or something.
He was just fine, and Jay Bruce was horrific. So, and he was making $14 million a year. So, and yet, you know, the fans' natural intuition would be among the informed modern fan, and we have more information than ever at our fingertips, and much of it is the same information that teams have, although the really smart ones have proprietary stuff that goes well beyond what we know about Jason Castro's framing. There may be stuff that in a way that it's gathered that leaves that in the dust, or what you can see at Stat Corner or Baseball Savant. But I just think that it's going to be it's going to add another layer to each decision that the Twins make, and this is where the very nimble minds of Mr. Falvey and Mr. Levine will process that information and put it to good use. More information, in theory, should be good. There certainly can be such a thing as too many cooks and too many data points, and that's where, in the end, the Twins will find their stride in decision making. And will, you know, good for them that they got out in front of the catching situation. So for 3 years, they're pretty well set there, and they don't care if he hits 210. They believe there's enough value in the occasional homer and the on base ability and the pitch framing. So, you know, maybe if LaTroy had been in the organization already, he would have had a strong thought on that, whether he felt that pitch framing had helped his career or not, or who was the best at it, or who maybe they should go get, that sort of thing.
So I thought about this. Falvey's 33, right? And Levine's 45. On one hand, does it show confidence that they're willing to bring in Falvey's case, guys who are older than them, who may challenge them and thoughts they have? And on the other hand, I guess, how does an organization kind of – they also, like, retained a lot of guys who were already in the organization, right? I mean, Bernanski and – I'm trying to – Butch Davis was the other guy they let go. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it seems like it shows confidence that they're like, look, we're not coming here blowing this whole thing up and bringing a whole bunch of people who are between 33 and 45 years old to run the organization. And on the other hand, you kind of mentioned the cooks in the kitchen. I guess, how do you think like an organization manages this where you're not having the guys in the bottom undermining the two guys on the top?
Well, I think that it starts with having a clear chain of command, and that chain on baseball operations starts with Derek Falvey. There's no confusion that he's number one and he has the final say if a tie needs to be broken, and those ties may need to be broken as soon as the winter meetings, if they hold them. I believe they will, but that's been some interesting saber rattling here in the last 24 hours in Major League Baseball. But and then Thad is a clear number two and has the ability, as he was in Texas, knows what it's like to work for a younger man. John Daniels was 5 years younger than him, and they worked very well over the years and won two straight pennants and came within an eyelash of a championship. So that I think linear age is overrated, as I say that at the where I am on my career arc and life arc.
But we're going to undermine you.
It is. I'm not afraid of being around younger guys, and you don't feel – I mean, it's pointless. What it's all about is ideas and personality and tact and pounding the table when it needs to be pounded, but rarely, because that can get annoying and it might break the table.
Yeah. So you did tease some CBA talk, and I did – want to break into that. What are you hearing lately? Because I think the last thing I saw was they were willing to maybe take international draft off the table from the owner's side of things, but it was kind of like all negotiations, a give and take. The international draft, so that the compensation would be lifted if they would agree to an international draft and all these things. And so now the current players aren't willing to sell future Latin American players up the river for that. It's hard as an outsider to keep up with all this. What have you seen in kind of, you know, keeping up with these things as you're getting prepared to knock on wood, pound on the table, go to the harbor here for the winter meetings next week?
Well, I'm not following it as closely as the national guys, and it was Ken Rosenthal's tweet, I guess, about that international draft being off the table now. And I actually think, and I tweeted along with that, that to me that would hurt teams like the Twins that never seem to get in on the Cuban, high-profile Cuban guys, because they have their own basket of availability, and it's a very pricey basket. But as you point out, Brandon, those points can be brought back in. It's all until you have a deal, sliding scale. I like this early talk about a I don't know how early it is anymore, but I like the talk about a 26th roster spot throughout the year. I like the idea that in exchange for that, they'll limit the roster spots that would be active per game in September.
It won't be 40 in September. Have they laid out a plan where it's like, oh, five inactives, or, you know, like the NFL
I've
has.
Seen reference to that. You could certainly have. And I think you and I and Tom might have been there. A few others have tried to hash that out with Terry at his round tables.
Well, in the clubhouse when we were watching all the guys filtering through thought, well, why not have a certain – because you can't have a 4.5-hour game between a 90-loss Twins team on September 20th when they're playing the White Sox. There's just no sense in it.
Yeah, so obviously, sir, there are matters of service time. Management doesn't want guys who are inactive that day to get credit for a service day, and I'm sure the players, of course, or the union's going to say no. If they were called up, they're on the active roster. They're just not on that game roster, whatever. So figure it out. Figure it out. Here's what I don't want to see, and it's as a fan, and certainly it's as a close observer of it, and looking just the tenor of big-time sports right now. This is no time for a work stoppage for Major League Baseball. It's never a good time, but there's no point to it. It's a $9.5 billion industry. As I said on Twitter last night, the NFL is in decline. There's all kinds of stories being written about the ratings falling and the general concussion fears and the violence of it, and people are turning away from it increasingly, and there are more entertainment options than ever, and they're all over the top and available in any form that you want them and on your schedule. And Major League Baseball has been so good with its MLBAM and its ability to get into people's minds and hearts and wallets over the last decade in every method of the internet. Don't do anything stupid. Now, it also strikes me that while Rob Manfred has been at the point of finding solutions and early agreements with Don Fehr, who is as fierce a negotiator as anyone in history, and then later multiple times with the late Michael Wiener, who was a wonderful person by all accounts and had an amazing ability to create consensus and to pick his battles properly, wisely, and give on some things, take on some others. Michael Wiener was a gem, and we lost him far too early. This is Tony Clark's first time where he's in the front chair. He's running the negotiating team for the union, and stridency does not work at a time like this. You have to hold your ground, but you got to pick your spots. You got to pick your battles, and you have to always keep an eye on the big picture. And the big picture is Major League Baseball is doing great. The players are doing great. The owners are doing great. Make a deal.
Does your gut say you're jumping on a plane here this weekend?
Yes, I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I feel like the logistics of canceling the whole thing would be kind of a mess too, wouldn't it?
I feel like this threat has been out there before. I'm blanking on when they got this far. It must have been a decade and a half ago.
Well, I remember being in high school, and there was a threat of I don't remember if it was an in-season lockout or if it was but it was something that was threatening in like 2002, maybe 2003.
Yeah, around you could have a signing freeze. I feel like 01 maybe.
That was the
contraction winter, and the 01-02 off season, and I went through it from the Marlins' perspective, and you guys saw it from the Twins' perspective, and of course the Expos had to deal with what they dealt with, I believe there was a period of signing freeze at least in there, but they still had the winter meetings. And teams still could talk and have deals set ready to go when they unfroze it. I believe that's when it was.
Is MLB in the best shape among the four leagues? I mean, I feel like football makes the most money, but has these concussion issues on top of dropping ratings and not knowing what to do Thursday night. The NHL, like MLB, seems to have diehard fan bases locally, but they get locked out all the time, and you know there's a huge salary crunch there. And NBA seems to be kind of on the biggest rise. But they don't seem, those local teams, or the teams don't seem to be as supported locally as like the big name players seem to be kind of the draw to the NBA. Do you feel like baseball is probably in the best place of all those four teams? Well, or leagues, I mean?
I think very possibly. I don't feel informed enough overall to make a definitive statement here, but I would encourage you to just look at the Forbes franchise values and take the last five sets of those for each sport and draw a graph for total franchise value. And then even if you want to break down individual markets, and you'll just see, you know, match up the Twins versus the Wolves versus the Wild and see where it's gone in the last 5 years. Match up teams in Miami or teams in Dallas. And, you know, I think by and large, I mean, just look at the local broadcast revenue, that phenomenon in baseball, which the Twins are not privy to at the moment because they made their long-term deal. I believe I wrote about this about a year ago, last February. I think they're under contract early into the next decade. So another 5 years, 6 years or so. But we've seen Arizona and St. Louis and Philadelphia and places that where baseball necessarily doesn't seem to be thriving. St. Louis it is. But and we know what the Dodgers are able to do, but they have plenty of controversy with the cable companies. That's an amazing revenue source, driving the salaries upward. And yet there is a bubble coming. I think other broadcast close followers, journalists have written about what if you see ESPN being dropped at an average of 3 million subscribers per year. And if you extrapolate that out to the end of the decade, there will come a point where the lines cross and the next rounds of negotiation nationally, that money, there will be a correction in major sports broadcast revenue. And then, of course, that will filter on down through the salaries. And there will it'll be some pain. There will be some pain. And obviously franchise values will collapse a bit. But even if there's a 10 or 20 or 30% correction, they're still way ahead in just about every case of where they were when they bought in.
I feel like baseball would benefit most from going to, like, opening things up to be viewed on tablet, for example. There's just so many games, and a lot of them take place during the afternoon. And also, I feel like their biggest issue is that they have diehard fan bases, but it's not young people. And if you opened up and allowed, you know, young people are the people who watch it on tablets and cut their cords. I feel like they're very resistant to that, and it doesn't make a lot of sense from a viewership standpoint.
I thought they were making progress in that even this past year.
I know with Fox Sports Go, but like with Xfinity, you can't use it, which is ridiculous.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
I watch. I guess that, no, it's labyrinthine. I couldn't explain the policy of blackouts. I know that it is frustrating in some markets. Do you know, Brandon, where you know is there a sport that does it best? Is there a market that
I mean,
that it's more open to watching on, you know, on different devices?
NBA is a whole different world than NFL. I know NFL, you get X many seconds of a play. They cut down on GIFs and all that. NBA is basically saying, use our film because they know there's this cottage
industry.
Yeah,
but they're having big issues this year with their MLB.TV equivalent, NBA,
yeah.
What do they call League Pass?
Yeah.
Super glitchy, laggy, 2 minutes behind action. And so people are watching and they're on Twitter finding out that Kevin Durant has hit a three-pointer to put his team up.
So
they're having all kinds of issues this
year. But
they
seem most open to
they're the most progressive, I think, as far as embracing the idea that publicity in multiple forms, maybe that isn't directly monetizable, still is good for the game. You know, they're not after the CJ Zeros of the world to take down their gifts and that kind of thing. But that's not to say that they aren't without issues, because their streaming service has been much maligned.
I mean, I guess if I'm MLB right now and it seems like there's some sort of labor piece, or it's not as bad certainly as the NHL, you're coming off a World Series that has to be one of the most viewed, right? Because the Cubs just won. And not only that, but you know, when I was younger, I always thought, well, it's really hard to root for any team outside of the big markets because the Yankees can outspend everyone. Even the Dodgers are trying to do that now. But we've seen the Giants and the Cubs break curses. Kansas City's won a World Series. St. Louis continues to be good. Cleveland, there's hope there, and that's a city that for years couldn't win a championship. I mean, the Twins certainly can't go, hey, we're poor, right? I mean, it's, you know, they're in a mid-market, and you're seeing teams that spend less than them do well at Pittsburgh or whatever.
Kansas City.
I feel like they need to strike while the iron's hot because who knows kind of how things will shake out. The Cubs could dominate the league for years from now, you know? I don't know. I feel like now's the time to go.
And Boston does have three titles in this setting, but they do spend plentifully. I guess we've seen reference to the luxury tax threshold, they prefer to call it the euphemism competitive balance, would come up from 189 to 200 million. But it is disappointing. I'll just say this, not to belabor it, but it is disappointing that the agreement is set to run out on December 1st and that we don't have a new agreement. I would have bet anything in the spring, and I saw Rob Manfred in the spring, and I saw Tony Clark in the spring, and the types of things they were saying. It was like, you know, we'll get there. We're talking consistently, and this and that. And how could you let it get to this point? I would have thought for sure that they would have announced it at the World Series as they did multiple times in extension.
That's the kind of thing you can sign in season, though. I mean, does it happen?
There are labor law, as Rob Manfred told us out in Arizona, does include a provision where a collectively bargained agreement can be continued beyond an expiration to a certain extent. What will happen, though, what would bring this to a head is if there were a lockout because you do have uncertainty on both sides, more so from the team perspective, on what the lay of the land is, what the ramifications are for a $100 or $200 million player signing and what sort of luxury tax implications there are and draft pick compensation. That needs to be sorted out, I will say. And we've seen this before with the threat of contraction even. Uncertain, any market abhors uncertainty. And if you have a situation where it's frozen and you can't sign anybody, or it's effectively frozen at the top end because teams are afraid to step out too far and go over that line, what you're eventually creating is a bit of panic among the players selling their wares, or eventually a very compressed signing period, as we saw coming out in '95, and then later in the decade of the '90s. You could have a situation where a whole bunch of guys, 50, 60, 70 guys, need to sign in a span of a week or 10 days going into spring training to have proper preparation. Oh, by the way, the World Baseball Classic is another fly in the ointment. People are going to need that extra time to prepare and not get hurt on that stage. God bless Sam Deduno. And
that's a blast from the past.
All of this factors in and will depress prices for labor. It just will, and of course everybody's poor mouth, and it is a poor group of starting pitchers that are available, but if you're Rich Hill and you've been waiting patiently for your turn and you know, you finally get to market yourself as maybe a $15 million a year guy, which is incredible, it hasn't happened yet, has it?
Right. Well, so to bring things back to more of a local standpoint, I think a lot of people are interested in the Brian Dozier situation and what will happen there. I will be identifying some of the teams I think that could make sense for him in an article that I'm writing for Cold Omaha that will go up later today. But do you get the sense that he is imminently available and that it's going to make sense for them to make a move here?
Well, as I mentioned on Twitter, I believe the day after Thanksgiving, I was told that they're telling teams that they will need to be wowed to move Brian Dozier. So that's setting the bar pretty high. Wowed is not necessarily listening. You know, there's all these little code words, but wowed is pretty strong. Wowed is you're going to let us pick through your young and controllable talent and top 10 prospect list, and you're not going to say no more than once or twice. That sort of thing. The wowed connotes to me that people will look at it and not necessarily say, oh, that's the Shelby Miller trade in reverse. You know, they're getting what the Braves got
right.
in the Shelby Miller deal. But it won't be one of those, wow, was that enough? It's not that kind of wow.
The Johan Santana to the Mets deal.
Well, that was a total fiasco, and you guys lived through it as fans at the time, but from afar.
We survived.
I do remember. I have something to add on that because it was just a happenstance. But, you know, John Henry, the Red Sox owner, formerly owned the Marlins, and no one had ever heard of John Henry when he bought into the Marlins, and he benefited very well from the franchise roulette. But I like John Henry, and so he was at a charity function maybe days after both the Red Sox and the Yankees had bowed out and Johan had landed on the Mets. And the Red Sox and Yankees, that was one of the all-time battles of, you know, I'll see your Phil Hughes and I'll raise you a Buchholz or whatever, and or a Lester. I mean, the names that were floating around when you look back, and Melky Cabrera and Jed Lowry, Jacoby Ellsbury, all these different incarnations it could have gone. And I asked John Henry about that and if he was disappointed, and he just smiled and he said, no, frankly, we were relieved. We had to make sure he didn't end up on the Yankees, but we didn't want to give away our young future, you know. And this was at a time when the Red Sox had two championships and had their eye on more, and it did take them a while to get that next one, but you know, the course of history was changed by that deal and the way Bill Smith botched it. And the Twins, really, I mean, how much better a situation would they have been in? And could they have done more in those succeeding years, in the early years of Target Field? And are we even talking about falling on your face period of the Twins? Would any of that have happened if they had maxed out that deal and gotten Lester and Ellsbury, let's say, you know, could they have just done it that simply? They didn't.
Is it weird that Bill Smith, it seemed like he did a lot of things behind the scenes that were good. He signed Polanco and Kepler, right? And was in on the Snow deal.
I think that was all the same year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was something like that.
It was the 09, epic 09 group. Yeah.
So essentially signing a superstar, and then I would see Kepler and Polanco as kind of complementary players, right?
They're everyday big league players. I mean,
or look like it.
Yeah, no, I think they are. I think they're everyday big league players.
Yeah.
So how do you explain that they, and I guess this is just conjecture, but that he did smart things that no one saw, but in terms of every trade is...
Well, his people, let's be fair. His people did that. His baseball people, and Terry Ryan was there as an advisor to whatever extent. On the good ones, he was on the good ones he was in the room. On the bad ones, he was out scouting somewhere. So
right.
It seems like whenever we bring those up, I don't know. I wasn't around for that one.
Yeah,
but you know, that's pretty good wiggle room. But I'll tell you very simply, there's quite a difference between trusting Fred Guerrero and your people in the Dominican to getting Jim Poulad to write a check for a 16-year-old. Or in Kepler's case, a German that Mike Radcliffe and his people in Europe and had a lot of knowledge about going back to when he was 14. Those are scouting signs.
Well, and he had a pretty ugly swing when he was that age too. Like yeah. Very arm, mm-hmm. Not much balance. And
well, he was coachable. He was smart. He projected to dancer parents and all that.
There
he's going to be an athletic, but big difference between deciding who to sign on the international free agent market. I think we could do that sometimes. You know, everybody was on Sano, just who was going to step up and make the relationship. Fred Guerrero made the relationship. He trusted him and wanted to go with the Twins because of that as much as the money. Other teams outbid him.
This isn't a documentary, right? The Pelotero or whatever?
Other teams outbid them. But as opposed to trying to put together a complex deal involving a multiple Cy Young winner and doing it in the proper order. You know, it's a fine line between letting a bidding war happen and shopping a perfectly fair offer. Some offers should just be accepted on the spot. They're that good. And I would submit to you that the Red Sox and Yankees at various times in that process were at that point. Take the offer before it gets taken off the table. And poor Bill, for whatever reason, and the people who were whispering to him at that time, it did not go well. It's probably unfair to put it all on Bill. It might have been even higher because they just had this sense that they have got to win this deal, and it can't just be a, you know, a two-touchdown win. It's got to be, you know, Leon Lett running a fumble back kind of win. Well, same,
wait a second.
Now
where did Don Beebe come into this?
Don Beebe, here he comes. I just think of a game that was over.
The Mets
early.
Were Don Beebe then.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. But here's Brian Dozier. And there will be some interesting offers for him, but not as many as there would be ordinarily off a 42-homer
sure.
amazing season. Because
The Brewers just DFA'd their 40-home run guy.
How about that?
That's something.
How about that? I mean, Chris Carter, not a good player.
Yeah, not as good as Dozier.
All he does is hit homers and
that's like
out.
All he does is catch touchdowns for Chris Carter, the wide receiver.
That's right.
I remember him coming up with Oakland, right? And he went 0 for 22 when he first came up or something like that.
Yeah, was he part of the...
That was a hot streak for him.
Heron deal or Brett Anderson?
He's been in multiple deals in a week span.
I think it was White Sox, A's, Diamondbacks. He jumped a lot of puddles back then.
He's a freak show.
So we talked about like Falvey and Levine. You called it auditing the organization. I wonder if they're going to put more emphasis on the pro scouting because it seems like the amateur guys have done their job. Like they've given them talent that gets to AAA. It just seems like with the pro scouts, like you have to know that Phil Humber's not going to. I'm just looking at one trade, but
he was a fairly big prospect
and had a perfect game. Right?
Wasn't as big of a prospect as Mike Pelfrey. At the time. I remember thinking, oh, why didn't they get Pelfrey? Who would have ever thought I would have be thinking of that?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think for one thing, I was told late in the year when the Twins were still deciding who to hire, there were people who said, well, if they bring in a Jason McLeod, let's say from the Cubs, he's going to say, you know, with the Cubs, we have X number of pro scouts and it's like nearly double what you have. So that's why you hear a lot of talk about infrastructure. The Twins need to beef up their pro scouting. The guys they have currently under Vern Folwell, very good. Good eyes, veteran eyes, and people who do know how to use statistics where needed. They're going to find they're definitely going to add in that department because that's not just how you find guys that you put into your major league roster immediately. That's where you find the guys, the Corey Kluber-type deals that the Indians made. You find those guys in AA or A-ball that other people are sleeping on somehow.
Jose Quintana, too.
Go get those guys. They're gettable. You can get young, controllable pitching when it's in the minors, and it might have even might come off one bad year. It might come off an injury that's not as serious in your estimation as in the team that's holding him. It might be a makeup issue that a certain team thinks a guy doesn't profile and they put more stock in that, and then this regime will say, well, we've had this kind of guy and he was an odd bird, and we had this kind of guy and he was arrogant, but you know, Trevor Bauer makeup wise would be off-putting as a young man. He's off-putting now. He just comes across arrogant. He comes across as uncoachable because he's got his circle of coaches.
Didn't he cut himself too? Wasn't that the guy?
My point is Indians got him in that deal as well as Brian Shaw from the Diamondbacks, one of about seven or eight deals made while Derek Falvey was an Indians employee. He was allowed to be in the room. He heard the back and forth, and he said one of the phrases he uses, and I learned something every time I'm around him, and I think we all will, because smart guy, but he also you get a sense of how
influence
landscape is, yeah. and the vocabulary. They have their own vocabulary, and one of those is a flat decision making, a flat hierarchy. It's not about stair step. Well, I'm number two in line, and you're number five, so I count three times more or something. No, that you get in a room as an Indians group and now a Twins group. A good idea is a good idea. And he doesn't care where it comes from, and they will dole out credit. And I just got the sense that Derek was allowed to weigh in on those acquisitions. There's not a lot of credit taking, but you just see the things that were said about him, and it led to a series of really good under the radar trades that all led to what we saw in October, and what we will see for years to come by an Indians team that, oh by the way, he's in the Twins division. So this is a storyline that's not going away. It could prove frustrating for years, but it's now, starting now, right now, with this Brian Dozier situation, with other under the radar trades the Twins could make. Is it time to take Taylor Rogers off that year and that spin rate and that weighted curveball success And as much as his makeup is strong and Molitor loves him, and I think a lot of him, and I think he's going to pitch for 15 years in the major leagues, mm-hmm. but will someone put something out there for them that has more upside? And they know how to weigh it. They know how to value these guys and project. And if somebody puts a potential number three starter or even a two, but he's in double A and there's some questions about him, you know, those are the kind of deals that's why these guys are here. And they've done it before, and they'll be asked to do it again.
So to come full circle, what does a perfect Dozier deal look like for you? Because for me, I think a friend of mine, Travis Owney, who's a big Twitter personality.
I saw what you said, and I started looking into that.
So I think what makes sense if the Twins go with the Diamondbacks is the first piece would be either, for me, Brandon Drury or David Peralta. You got to be convinced that Peralta's healthy. Again, I see you shake your head, but this is just where I'm coming from.
Okay.
One of those guys, if it's Drury, you get Drury in a pitcher. If you get Peralta, who is the player I think Eddie Rosario would desire to be, but is not, I'd go Peralta, a pitcher, and then a wild card, whether it's Pete O'Brien, who could be a DH, just a throw-in.
That's not enough. I'm not hearing enough. I'll tell
but
you.
But maybe the pitcher would either be, you know, Braden Shipley.
Archie Bradley. I've seen him in the fall league.
Robbie Ray.
I saw him throw a bullpen alone. I know what his reputation is. He's been frustrating for them a little bit last couple of years. Some knick-knack stuff. And then a 5 ERA. Give me Archie. I know Robbie Ray, you made some real eye-opening points.
What
about
Shelby Miller? Would you take him on to try fix him?
No, not as
the number one piece, but as the number two piece in the deal.
No, I think there's too many red flags there. Now, he's failed in multiple places and driven people crazy in multiple places. Too erratic.
Couldn't he be Trevor Bauer 2.0?
I know he's a little bit older than that. And,
true.
I don't know Shelby Miller. I never talked to him, but I'd be wary of that in this Dozier trade. Now,
I saw you shaking your head for Drury when I brought the name.
I don't
up Drury.
Know. I know he's good, but that's I
24 year old everyday player. That's where I'm coming from. Is if they can get a 24 year old mm-hmm. everyday player, or in Peralta's case, 3 years of control for a guy who
it comes down to that control.
I think he had
metric.
850 OPS in playing left field, left handed bat.
Yeah.
But he's the player that Eddie Rosario would desire to be. Not a ton of difference between his on-base and average, but enough. He was injured this year. But that 2015 gives you something to dream on.
When I look at the Diamondbacks, I look at that trove of young, controllable pitching with poor traditional numbers. And there are, if you pick through it closely enough, as I know you have already, and obviously Mike Hazen and his people are going to do in the Red
For
Sox,
sure.
the top three guys with Red Sox, close ties and Cubs ties in Jared Porter's case, they're going to be tough to deal with because they know exactly. They went out and got Taijuan Walker when they did at the base of his value, perhaps, and they moved Segura at the peak of his. That's going to work out for them nicely. But I do get a sense, and in talking to people who've worked there in recent years, there was organizational frustration with Archie Bradley, and yet he's a horse, man. He's one of those guys who has already gotten some of the growing pains out of the way still. You don't have to pay him arbitration money even for a couple of years. I'd want him in there. I get a sense that Robbie Ray, you know, we saw him pitch with the Tigers too. He's a more of a known quantity it's kind of obvious that the metrics say he pitched in poor luck and that he's better than the numbers would show. If Tony La Russa were still in charge there, the Twins would load, they would back up the truck there, and they'd come away with,
like,
I would
like
say,
tweeted,
give me Ray. That's right. They put TLR in timeout.
My brother thought that was
too
a funny
bad.
Thing.
No, that was nice.
He really liked it.
That was nice. Hello, Cody. But I just think that would have been the opportunity. It's fascinating, always fascinating to me when equally adept executives in any sport make a deal. Ideally, Derek will tell you this, the best trades help both teams.
It's
they
a poker
want
game,
that.
Right?
They're not looking to put one over on anybody. Right. You try to do that, nobody wants to deal with the Padres now, do they?
I was just going to say Preller. I was about to invoke
try to do that,
Preller.
You try to do that, you end up annoying people on ESPN like Jim Bowden has to do. So,
ouch.
I'm sorry, though.
No, it's right, though.
It's not good business.
No,
well,
it's not.
Derek's not going to operate that way. Thad never has. And they're going to make deals that they see more value. If they're going to trade Brian Dozier, I have to believe it'll come out where they will see more value. And those who are really astute about it around the game will say they made a nice deal there. It has to be fronted by young, controllable pitching. Ideally, people who've already taken some lumps in the minors and might have one plus years of service time. Because if you trade a Dozier for two guys who are in double A, even if they have high, high upsides, and that Dodger system has plenty of options like that, and I've tweeted ad nauseum about it, if you just trade Dozier for two high-end top 10 pieces from somebody's system with zero major league time, there is more of a chance that you come up empty. You can't come up empty here. So I'd like somebody who at least has had a chance to put his stuff out there on a major league platform, even if the results have been disappointing or erratic. And I just keep coming to that. If it's with the Diamondbacks, I'd be very confident that Archie Bradley would be discussed quite a bit.
Yeah, that big league hurdle is a big one to clear, just getting there.
Look at the Atlanta Braves, big three. Look at their late 80s stats when they first broke in. You look at Glavin and Smoltz, and then you look at Avery.
What about Maddux in Chicago? Wasn't great.
You get your head beat in for the first year or two, and you could go on to the Hall of Fame. If I'm Jim Polad, my challenge to Falvey and Levine, find me guys with Hall of Fame talent who on paper right now look just beaten up and then might look like failures. Go get me Smoltz and Glavin and Avery for the next generation and Maddux. That's a tall order, but it's doable. You can get those guys, and this is what you trade Brian Dozier for. It's the only thing you trade. There are ways to structure the deals in a variety of ways, but to get fair value. But if Derek Falvey's put his life's work is breaking down pitching and finding undervalued pieces out there and helping the Indians get them, now it's his job to help the Twins get them. One thing you do worry about a little bit from Thad's perspective, and I'm sure he's done some self-analysis and gone back and seen why the Rangers let people like Kyle Hendricks and Tanner Roark and there's others out of the building. Of course, in each case, they were trying to go for it. They were in a method of a realm of trying to go over the top. But those kind of guys can be had in trades too. Jake Arrieta to the Cubs in the Feldman deal. So
getting his brain beat.
Yes, and the Orioles washed their hands of it. They said if Dave Wallace can't fix him, we can't figure this guy out. That's Buck's sick of him. That's enough. And he goes on and becomes what he is. So maybe that's what you do in this scenario. You're looking for high upside talent. You're looking for on the surface, something is amiss. He's had some major league opportunity. And if it's a makeup thing, and that's where Torrey and Kadir and LaTroy might be able to pick up the phone and get in touch with one of their former teammates and somebody to say, you know what, deep down he's a decent guy. He is coachable. There's enough there to work with. I'd do it. That's the kind of conversation you can have if you were so recently in a major league clubhouse that even a scout can't have.
So this is less immediate than a Dozier trade, but Molitor is going to be on a one-year deal, and I think Falvey probably is very spoiled with Tito, right? I mean, you have one of the best managers in baseball, very proven. And you look at kind of him and between him and Madden, you had probably two of the smartest guys leading two teams to the World Series. Plus Bochy had been, he's in the playoffs and had won with San Francisco. I feel like Molitor in the clubhouse is a great asset just because he doesn't seem to want to talk about himself as a player. So if anything, he's gotten over the fact that he was a Hall of Fame guy and that his players probably won't be as good, or most of them won't be as good as he was. He seems very patient, especially in a season with losing after coming off such a, euphoric, if you will, 83-win season. And he seems very methodical, that like he'll hold players accountable and he's not afraid to challenge people. And it's a different style than Ron Gardenhire, but if anything, Gardenhire seemed to sometimes let things slip a little bit. At the same time, like he's got to get the kind of X's and O's down. I mean, where do you see the future there? Obviously, we'll all be in the clubhouse with him and don't want to, want to be careful with what we say, but I feel like a good manager at some point is part of that winning formula if they're going to go to the playoffs and beyond.
I would submit to you that Paul Molitor in 2015, when he had a healthy and productive roster, was a good manager and can be again in 2017 and beyond. And I also think it very much helps his case that Falvey had daily contact with Terry Francona, and they're very short list of people in baseball currently who have a better relationship with Molitor than Terry Francona. They would vouch for each other to no end because they're former teammates and they stayed in touch over the years and they speak the same language. Perhaps Francona has done a better job and obviously championships would prove it, but he's had more opportunity to do so, of integrating modern thought and statistics into his game managing and to his handling of players and his lineup construction, all that. Molitor could learn from some of that, and maybe Falvey gently will help him decide not to bunt as much or to give Joe Mauer a longer run at leadoff, let's say, since that's what he pretty much is these days. If Carlos Santana was their leadoff hitter, why not Joe Mauer here? It was just certainly one of the crimes of modern civilization that Brian Dozier hit 42 home runs and didn't get to 100 RBIs, right? So it just shouldn't happen, and that sort of thing can be addressed with something as simple as the lineup construction. And believe me, Molitor had people urging him to hit Mauer leadoff for a longer span. He tried it for a week. Joe had a downturn that week, and that was it.
Do you have any free agents that you think you're monitoring here as far as maybe the Twins could pursue? I know catcher was like the landmark, the number one with a bullet thing that they had to address. In fact, it's kind of funny. I know fans will want you to address things linear, your biggest problems first, your smallest problems down the line. But I think catching was an even bigger problem than finding pitching because of how many pitchers they just have. Oh, wow, looks like Cespedes back to the Mets as of just now. But anyway, sorry to drop that in there. But
boom!
Do you see them monitoring any other free agents or any other targets? I know one of the things that was brought up was maybe finding veterans that could maybe supplement this roster. Again, I'm not sure where they would play, whether it be short or the outfield. But does your gut say, hey, keep an eye on these types of free agents, even if you don't have specific names?
Well, you know, there are other names to be had in this ilk, but you know, Justin Masterson, as we said, source monitoring that situation closely says mm-hmm. that there possibly might be a fit this time after several years of flirtation between the two sides. And of course, Falvey had this guy in Cleveland, and he was pretty good there at times when healthy. It's always when healthy, but somebody like that, I'd see them signing two or three kind of guys like that to minor league deals. Make good deals. Every team's going to do that. But I think the difference here is Jabba Chamberlain's a guy who came up early. I think Tolleson hasn't signed anywhere yet, and Thad knows him so well. And
the Rangers guy, right?
Closer recently. He's still sitting out there. That's the kind of guy you want to sign. Bounce low risk.
Guys.
Yes, and I certainly wouldn't mess with any situational lefties. I wouldn't pay for any situational lefties, but if somebody was just beaten down, like I don't know, what's Fernando Abad going to get on this year's market? I'd be open to bringing him back on a minor league deal. If he gets nothing better, I'd bring him back. He's a good guy, and you already flipped
does,
him
does he,
along.
Doesn't he have
Pat
one more
Light.
Year of control with the Red Sox?
Oh, maybe he does, yeah.
Yeah, I think he does.
But, arbitration. But
we'll see if he gets tendered, though.
I also would, that date's coming up the end of the week unless they freeze things. So.
Right.
It's hard to say. Joe Blanton's a free agent, and I was impressed with what he's been able to do reinventing himself. I don't know what he's going to cost. He's going to be on your 40 man, but I don't know that I'd go too crazy. The spin rate on Romo's slider is still really good, and everybody feels like he's washed up. But I noticed that there's going to be little opportunities like that, and we've seen some guys already, like Charlie Morton sign. That were kind of spin rate darlings.
Casey Fien is a spin rate guy.
He is a spin rate guy. So is Boyer and Malone on that list. They're on there. But I'd bring Casey. He was throwing a curveball, too.
Oh, that might be it.
Remember, they tried to get him to do that in the spring. He didn't do it very well the first month, and I guess there were times when it had real spin on it. But they know how to decipher that stuff better than we do, although we do have the data, and they're going to look at the horizontal break and vertical break and all that. But Greg Holland's going to cost way too much because of Boris, and
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go there.
I wouldn't mess with that.
But like,
I like Aaron Barrett. Aaron Barrett is the name I love. I think Aaron Barrett from the Nationals. Yeah. He'll have, I think, three or four years of control. Probably will sign a minor league deal coming off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah,
25, 26 years old or whatever he is. That's the kind of deal I'd be
I'll tell you
for.
Another guy, like Peter Moylan's a free agent. I love Peter Moylan.
He's an interesting guy.
Had him originally.
Interesting
guy. I don't know what he's going to cost. If he's a million plus some incentives, I'd take him.
Yeah.
I'm not. Heck, I know people would kill me for this, but, you know, if, on a minor league deal, I'd take Kevin Jepsen back.
I would, too, actually. He's a huge bounce-back candidate.
Right?
He's had bad years where he's bounced back from. I mean, yes. He's gotten one of those deals. Okay, so before I let you go, I did put out the bat signal to see if we could get any questions from Twitter. Dangerous minds out there on the internet. But
Joe Smith's another guy I like because he's closed and he drops down. He's got a different interesting look. And he's going to come cheaply, I think.
Yeah, as long as you let him face righties. I remember he faced Arcia this year, and I said, Arcia's going to hit a home run, and then boom. I got a little bit of ego about that. Joe at MNTwinsFan44 wants to know, Mike, what you think of this. How much value does a pitcher lose when they have arm issues? For example, Vincent Velasquez of the Phillies. Do you think they lose a lot of value in terms of trade if they have had issues with health, you know, with their arm?
Well, I think there's opportunities with that. And again, you have to put faith in the opposing GM that he'll not have a separate database for the injury history. And I would say the bulk of them, or virtually all of them, and now even the Padres, will not have that. But it still happened with Pomeranz. And then, of course, you might have all the information in front of you, and many of these are individual. So I'd be fearful. You know, even guys coming back from Tommy John, for all the talk about, it's like a trip to Jiffy Lube and you know, just wait. Just got to wait. Just got to wait the 10 to 12 months or whatever, or 12 to 14 in some cases. It's not 100%, 94. So it depends what you're giving up. If this is a signing that doesn't cost you any players, that's one thing. But if it's in the Dozier deal and somebody wants to give you a guy back in that deal who's coming off Tommy John, like I think Walker Buehler, with the Dodgers, well, I don't think I want that guy in that deal. Or if it's De Leon with
the
Dodgers.
Shoulder, you've been saying.
With the shoulder, it's in all the write-ups. I mean, I don't have that proprietary. It's in all the write-ups that he one reason that his innings were limited last year was his shoulder inflammation. Well, that's a red flag to me, and it depends. You know, if we're talking about a deal that's more modest, or even if you're talking about trading Irvin, let's say, in a deal to the Dodgers, that's a different thing to me than the Dozier deal. The Dozier deal, it's got to be pristine pieces, although, and I still would consider Archie Bradley pristine because at this point he's healthy and he's built up the innings and he's scouts love him. He's a horse. I thought I was watching Curt Schilling throw in the bullpen. I really did.
That's interesting.
He's got the broad shoulders and the and just a big lug.
You can dream on those kind of body types, though.
Yes.
Body types. It's
Archie Bradley, to me, has a chance to be Curt Schilling, the player. I don't know what he's like on Twitter, but he has a chance to be Curt Schilling, the player, who, to me, I'll vote for him again for Hall of Fame.
There you go. Well, that's all we got for you. Yoenis Cespedes, 4 years, $110 million with the Mets. Nothing yet on an opt-out, but I suspect that ship has sailed. So what is that, 27.5 per year? I think that's what it comes out to. That's a pretty healthy deal for him to go back to the Mets, but that's neither here nor there. Thank you very much, Mike, for coming on. I thought we'd have you on 2 weeks in a row so you could enjoy your time in the harbor next week. You've been great, and really appreciate you coming on.
Love being here. Next time, I expect chicken.
Okay, we can make that happen. This is Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.